This is 98.1 FM, Raglan Community Radio, Erirangi o Whaingaroa. Hello, kia ora, my name is Jason. I teach holistic health and healing, and welcome to Your Health, Your Choice, a show that guides you on your healing journey, helping you choose your own healing path. And today, to help us on that path, I have a good friend of mine, Andrew. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Jason. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, there's a lot of stuff you know, and you got some skills there and a lot of knowledge that you can share with people. And today I'd like to focus on what you know around Ayurveda.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say right? Ayurveda?
It's the right pronunciation or close enough anyway.
I was introduced to it, and I think I was introduced to it through the detoxification protocol. Is it Pancha? How do you say it?
Panchakarma.
Panchakarma, yeah. And that's where I learned about ghee and clarified butter and how that's a really good medicine. But how did you get into it? What made you go into this? I mean, you got all these other skills as well, but what made you come the Ayurveda healing route?
So my wife and I had some pretty bad experiences in the Western medical system where she'd had a whole bunch of digestive problems for about a decade. And they later figured out that it was thyroid stuff going on as well. They could monitor it with blood tests after we pushed them to get the blood tests, which was no easy feat.
Right.
And they said pretty much, well, your choice is to go on levothyroxine for life, and that's it. Yep, job done. So
similar story to me with my gut health, and you know, I diagnosed it as consteria, where you're just switching between the two, and they just gave me pills and said, "This is your lot for life," until I found a different route.
And it's just so frustrating that it takes away your agency to actually choose your own life. So we went, well, no, we're not going to be going on these, thank you very much. And we'd played around and experimented with different diets and nutrients and supplements, and we'd improve things, but there was still something missing. So things were maybe 50% better, 60% better, but there was still the gap. So we went to India, we spent 4 months, and India is a pretty big place, and we had the problem of trying to go, because we wanted to go down the Ayurvedic route. So my wife's Punjabi, so she's been exposed to this before, but we weren't too sure about who to go to, who to trust, who to not trust. So we spent quite a bit of time just working it out. We spent some time up in Patanjali, which is quite close to Rishikesh, Haridwar. That was really nice, and had a good introductory experience to Ayurveda there.
Was that through a course or through a practitioner?
They've got a hospital there, Baba Ramdevji, he runs it. And essentially it's one that's aimed at the everyday sort of folk. So, well, there's two hospitals there. One is aimed at more of the richer people. One's aimed at the more everyday folk. We started with the everyday people, and it was good to get a bit of an overview. So things that were useful for everybody. We hadn't completely solved the problem there, though we'd got some insights, so we went down to Kerala, which is the birthplace of Ayurveda, down in South India, and we got a lot of good treatment there. Then we headed up to Rishikesh to go and get some more information around cooking and that sort of stuff. So we ended up coming away with quite a bit of information, and my wife is just feeling a lot better overall, and she has the knowledge so that when things aren't going well, she knows how to self-correct. So that was a massive improvement. And again, her TSH is back within normal range. Not just what the doctors say is normal range, but normal range.
So that's thyroid stimulating hormone.
Yes. So we're now, last time I checked, she was sitting at about a 2, which is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, you got to be careful with normal range and the common range, because what's normal now would have been abnormal a few years ago.
Well, it's like if you take 4.5... is supposedly normal according to lab tests, but pregnant women are told, well, you're in trouble if you're above 2.5.
Yeah.
But anyway, TSH issues aside, I could go on all day.
No, but just in terms of lab results, they have shifted the norm.
Yes.
Because people are getting sicker.
Yes.
And it's interesting. Why would you shift the norm?
It's a subset of the population, right? So if the if, say, more of the population have got thyroid issues, then you've got more of the extremes and it skews the average.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
So, how old is Ayurveda, do you know? I've heard it's like thousands and thousands.
Yeah.
Is it one of the oldest, like with traditional Chinese medicine? I think those two are.
Those two are, yeah. And in India, it's one of the five main parts of their medical system. So Ayurveda, its main goal is to keep you healthy. So they've got interventions and that sort of thing if you're sick, but they take time. If you've, say, broken your arm, you don't want to go to Ayurveda. But if you're wanting to go and live a healthy, holistic life and you're wanting to shift your lifestyle and your diet, Ayurveda is the place to go. It's like yoga's more the spiritual sort of side. But
what about the Panchakarma? That seems to be more of a deep... Is that keeping you healthy as well? That's just a normal...
That's tied into Ayurvedic treatments. So
treatments, okay.
Ayurveda's got two branches. Mm-hmm. One is like your everyday routine and one is the treatment. So if you're undergoing Ayurvedic treatment, they're probably going to put you on a Khichdi diet, which means lentils and rice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they might not. It depends on your particular situation, but quite often for a detox. And then you'd be getting a lot of oil-based massage with different healing herbs and things infused into the oil, treatments done in a particular way. Like that's what we had done in Kerala. Both my wife and I actually, we went, well, we're both here, so we both might as well get it done. Very different treatments for both of us. Mm. It's like I had the unfortunate, well, it was a good experience, but I didn't enjoy an enema, but...
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that tends to be one of the things I hear time and again in functional medicine, holistic medicine, and now you tell me in Ayurvedic medicine, enemas, they're quite the key. They're actually integral.
But it depends on what your particular problem is.
Yeah, see, I mean, you don't just do them for the fun of it, that's for sure.
Yeah. But again, it's in yoga as well, there's also, so like over in Patanjali, it was more of a fusion of yoga and Ayurveda. And there was some treatment there on the yoga sort of side that we'd had. But anyway, I reckon that the Ayurvedic treatment was really helpful and it helped get results. But we were there for about 2 weeks, which was about the minimum in Kerala. That's about the minimum sort of time. And for a serious problem, you'd be looking at longer, so maybe a month or something like that. So this isn't a quick fix. We were in a hospital sort of situation where... the security guard would lose his job if we were to manage to break out of the building.
Mm.
And it was all quite controlled. And the point was, is that if you were there, you were there to get well, not to be playing on your mobile phone or things like that. So it took quite a bit of energy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to think what mindset you were in to think, to go all the way to a different country to find this, you know, to follow this different healing practice. Take 4 months to take all this time and energy and money, whereas a lot of people just want to go down the road, get a pill, and that's it. So what was it for you to not be to accept just going down the road and having a pill for the rest of your life?
Well, what it really was is that
we didn't, people just like easy, but you didn't take the easy route at all, and well, it's paid off.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you don't have to live that way. And if we weren't designed in nature to have, we weren't designed to be popping pills every day. So if you can avoid it, it's best to. And again, because the problem's been sticking around for that long, what happens if there's any issues with the pills and you need more pills and that sort of thing? We'd rather just get on top of it and deal with the problem at its core and then just move on.
And you're okay with the investment of time and everything and energy?
Yeah.
It was worth to get it sorted once and for all.
It definitely was.
And the thing is, I think in the mass, the main, or what is it, in the zeitgeist, people think, I've got an issue, go to see this person in a white coat, get a pill and it's gone. But actually it just hides the symptoms. It doesn't remove the cause.
Ayurveda's got a bit to say on that as well. It's a bit like if you've got a problem that's going on, the symptom is often there to go and tell you, hey, there's a problem. And if you mask the symptom, it's just going to keep popping up until you address it. So from the Ayurvedic point of view, they call it a dosha imbalance. So their basic idea is that every single person has got a dosha that you're born with, which means body type. And there's three main ones, but you can have combinations and sub-combinations.
Yep.
Like your vat, which is air and space. So people who are typically fast-minded, light, thin, they've got to have more meals more often. There's also a little bit potentially a nervous disposition. There's a whole long list of characteristics. You've got your pit, which is fire and water. I'm a pit. Typically there, it's... you'll find that, again, the digestive fire is quite strong, so they can have quite a lot of things. They're a little bit more well-rounded in terms of their face, a little bit more fiery, potentially. Again, there's a long list of characteristics. Cuff is the last one, which is earth and water. So they're the ones that are on the larger side, a little bit more slower, more sedate, calmer.
Sounds like me. Larger side and slow.
Yeah, well, they're the stronger type as well, yeah. So physical strength. But yeah, the idea behind Ayurveda is you first look at, well, what is your natural dosha? And then you say, well, is your current dosha out of balance? So let's say you're naturally a cuff. And
which is, what was that one again?
So that one is the earth and water, the one that we thought you might be. And you might have an imbalance due to potentially the season, potentially what you're eating, potentially a sickness. It could be anything. And it can build up over time. And that might be, say, a vata imbalance. So you might have too much of that air and space sort of thing. And that could be affecting your health.
So it moves from one dosha looking more like another.
Yeah, exactly. What you're currently in. Or you might even have a calf imbalance. You might have too much of what you naturally are. So anything that could be too much or too little. And there's ways to diagnose that. Like they've got some doctors can go and read it from your pulse, examinations. They've also got there are blood tests and that sort of thing that are done as well, which I quite like that they're also in taking some tools on from the West too. But the idea is once you've identified the imbalance, then you treat the imbalance, and that's where panchakarma and all of that comes in. But preferably you want to stop things getting to that point.
Yes, yeah.
And that's when your lifestyle comes in. So you can get recommendations based on your body type about what time to eat food, what sorts of food are good for you, and over, say, the season. So at different times of the day, different doshas go up and go down during the seasons. Different ones go up and go down.
So they have their own cycles.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it's just a constant cycle. So it's like my wife, she is vat. So she is told to eat at a slightly different time to me, being pit. She's told to eat more meals and smaller meals compared to me. My digestive fire is really strong, so my meal for breakfast, I'd be having a lot of protein, and I'd be having a lot of nuts and that sort of thing, and seeds. For her, she's told don't have nuts and seeds because it's hard to digest for her. So you'll find with Ayurveda that you get quite a personalized recommendation for your ongoing health and well-being, because not everyone's the same.
Yeah.
No one's the same. And because of that, you've got to have your own recommendations.
What if there's two people with the same dosha? Would they be given the same recommendation?
If they've got the same dosha and the same imbalances, then yes.
It's based on the imbalance.
It's both. So you've got your natural. So imagine if you've got your normal line and you've just perturbed a little bit away from normal. Well, you might as well just be focused on what your normal is and accommodating to that. But if you've got major health issues, you're probably perturbed a long way away from normal. And that means that we need to get you to normal and give you a diet that will get you there. And then you can go and focus on the normal. So there are herbal supplements and that sort of thing. Like you might've heard of ashwagandha.
Yeah,
That's one of the things that sometimes gets recommended, but there's a huge number.
What's that? There's one with the three.
Trifala, yep. Yep, that's one of them. But again, it depends on what your particular imbalance is, but that's in the realm of correcting for imbalances rather than keeping you healthy. But Ayurveda typically will take time to correct for imbalances. It's not a fast fix.
So would ashwagandha be considered for keeping you healthy, or is that for when you're out of balance, or both?
Typically out of balance, but for some people, again, I'm not an ashwagandha expert. This is why I've got books like the one in front of me.
But I like recommending that rhodiola or and holy basil, those three.
Tulsi.
Yeah, tulsi, which are adaptogenic herbs, you know, because they adapt to what's going on in the body. If you're up, they'll bring you down. If you're down, they'll bring you up. But yeah, so when you're out of balance. So yeah, that makes sense.
Exactly. But again, it's like there's the whole, there's things like the seasonal cycle, for example. So in winter, you'll find that there's different doshas are more prevalent and you'll recommend a different food compared to summer. And it's like you would have seen it in the Western, and the Western sort of style, where you've got these warm, hot soups in summer and these colder vegetables, salads, sorry, hot, warm, hot soups in winter, vegetable salad, colder vegetable salads in summer. That sort of thing ties through to Ayurveda. And again, it tied in quite well to what the nutritionists were telling us as well. It's like we were told how you eat the meal is really important, when you eat the meal is really important, not just the contents.
So it's eating seasonally.
According to your dosha.
Yep.
At the times according to your dosha.
Right.
And.
And the how?
Yeah, it's like, for example, they recommend not to have leftovers. So cooking fresh, cooking with love.
Right, right, right.
And it's that sort of stuff helps. But there's a point when you go, well, I've only got so much time and so much oomph that I can give to this. So you, the problem is Ayurveda has got so much depth to it. It's better to start at the basics. So you just start with, right, thing like there's combinations of food that you just shouldn't have, like milk with salt or milk with lemon. It's like, think of it this way. If I take milk and I dump a whole bunch of lemon in, what's going to happen? It's going to curdle.
Yeah.
So you don't want to have milk together with something sour. Ayurveda's built in with a system of tastes. So you've got your sweet taste, sour, salty, bitter, pungent, astringent. But I guess all of this is detailed that takes, I think it takes it away a bit from its core, which is the core of Ayurveda, which everyone can apply, is look at your own body type and what works for you. It's not going to be the same as everyone else. There's no one diet fits all. If in doubt, just play around and experiment. See what food works well for you, and it will be different at different times. Yeah. What times you should eat.
Yeah, that's like the best exercise is the one that you will do.
Exactly.
It's not any specific exercise. It's just one that you enjoy and that you will consistently do over and over. And the best food will also be one that, you know, is in season. And that you enjoy, and that you know how to prepare and cook, and that you find not like health shouldn't be stressful.
Exactly. It's like if you're being told that in the middle of winter it's time to crack out the mangoes and that's what's essential for your health.
Nah.
You're probably going down the wrong road. We've adapted to live in harmony with nature and the seasons, and there's got to be an easy way to get the food you need when you need it. Either it's right there right now, or you're able to preserve it. It's like you'd mentioned ghee, for example. Like you want to cook and use that more in winter. So if you think of it from, like, it's quite high in fat and that sort of thing, and it ties in well with a winter diet when you're cold and you need that sort of heating power from it. But yeah, different foods, different properties, useful at different times.
Yeah, and it's not just high in fat, but in animal fat that's rich with vitamin A and K2. That's where you get that nice gold, rich, yellow colour. And butter and egg yolks that are that same colour. That colour represents nutrition. And one of the things I believe a lot of people are not getting today is vitamin A. That's a big one. They're getting... People are taking supplements, multivitamins, and it's not the actual correct vitamin A. Like the one you should be looking for is retinol, which is a more bioavailable form.
Active and inactive form sort of thing.
Yeah, and the cheaper supplements use the inactive forms. Same with certain B supplements. And
B12 is really prone to that.
Yeah, so you've got to make sure. And food, you know, supplements are there to supplement a good diet. And is there anything about, so the Ayurvedic diet is a vegetarian one?
Traditionally, yes, but it doesn't have to be. Again, this is the, what level do you want to go to? Because if you feel like, if I was talking to someone and I said to them, well, you've got to give up meat to do an Ayurvedic diet, they'd say no way. It's like, sure, you'd probably benefit from it, but that's up to you. And you'd be better off just doing something that you can implement and take the benefit from it. Pretty much in the Ayurvedic point of view, meat is really, really heavy.
Right.
Really, really, really heavy. So it's the sort of thing that you'd want to consume when your digestive fire is the strongest.
Yeah.
Your digestive fire is the strongest around the middle of the day.
Mm.
So it's like Ayurveda, you'd probably want to have your high protein, a fairly light breakfast, but high protein and that sort of thing. Your heaviest meal for lunch and a light meal for dinner, bearing in mind that vat, you're probably going to want to have snacks and that sort of thing in between. Pit, you probably want to have three meals in the day. Kapha, you could get away with two meals, maybe even one meal.
Yeah.
And you probably want to do that when your digestive fire is the strongest.
Lunch. So, yeah.
Yeah, lunchtime. Because, yeah, it just goes through the different cycles.
Cool. Yeah, they really realize about the cycles and the body types. That's interesting. Because then you got the female cycle, and then which is monthly. Then you got the male cycle, which is daily, you know, it moves throughout the whole day, every day. But then you got these body types as well. There's a lot of things to keep track of.
Yeah. I've got a lot of respect for the doctors. It's like when in the female cycle, that affects what time, like what sort of treatments you can have, according to Ayurveda.
Yeah.
But there's the thing is just, I think people shouldn't be stopped by the depth. Just keep it simple. What can you apply today? And I think thinking about when you eat your meals is probably one of the best things. And making sure that you're going and taking on food that is seasonal. You probably want to go and have the heaviest meal at lunch.
Is there anything about eating your last meal hours before you go to sleep? Because my recommendation is have your last bite 3 hours before you go to sleep. Just to ensure that when you're sleeping, you're not digesting. You're actually sleeping. Mm. Sleeping is a process, but if your body's digesting, that process will overtake sleeping and you'll just be knocked out but not rejuvenating or getting restorative sleep. Is there anything in there about sleep?
There is, meals? But different body types, different time recommendations.
Okay.
Again, without getting into the fiddly detail, yes, 3 hours sounds reasonable.
Mm.
And again, I think just not getting hung up on the detail is important, and go to the level that you're at, and then you can look to the next level and the next level. And there's always going to be more.
Yeah. That's cool. Is there anything about sleep that you can share that they focus on?
Sleep was something that we probably didn't look at enough. Again, the amount of sleep that you need will depend on your body type and your stage in life and the season. Sleeping during the day. It's like over in India, it gets very, very hot during the day. And in the middle of summer, typically it's okay to have a brief nap during the day.
Is that like half an hour?
An hour.
Okay.
During the heat of the day. But that's not something that's recommended outside of that. But again, in New Zealand, we've got different climate conditions. Might not apply during our summers. I haven't actually played around with that one. But in general, if you're going to sleep in a good emotional state and you're winding down and you're waking up in a good emotional state, you might want to start the day with whatever meditative practices that you do, maybe some exercise. Oh, yes, going to the toilet and doing your number two first thing in the morning. That's great.
Okay, is that part of the recommendation? Yeah.
Part of the recommendation and making sure that you're getting enough water. Water, 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 water. It's easy to underdo.
Is there a specific time of day we should be loading up?
Not during, so during meal times, you only want to have a very little amount of water.
Yep.
And you want to have no water half an hour before, half an hour after. The idea, according to Ayurveda, is it weakens the digestive fire. And you can think of it from the Western point of view. You've got your stomach acid. Do you want to be diluting it at the time that you're going to be digesting it? Like if the food's dry, it makes sense. You need to have some, but you don't want to be gulping down bottles and bottles.
Yeah, that's interesting. So my recommendation is half an hour before you eat, it's good to have something like lemon juice to get the juices flowing, maybe some apple cider vinegar, half an hour before. Have that diluted in water. And that sort of primes the digestive juices. And then I recommend an hour, at least an hour before you, if you're going to have something, if you need to drink something during a meal, sip. And what that tells me is you're not chewing enough. Usually it's people that don't chew enough to make their food liquid. There's a saying, drink your food, chew your water, which means you should be chewing your food enough that you can basically drink it, and then you won't feel the need to drink any liquids during your meal. And then chew your water means to swirl the water around your mouth so you can get saliva on it, enzymes, so that it's more absorbable. But yeah, no, that's cool.
Yeah, and as well, like the bitters, that you're pointing out, that's really good in the morning in particular to get your digestive fire started before your breakfast. But yeah, typically with Ayurveda, you're not waking up and going straight into breakfast. Waking up early as well with the sun, or before the sun, I guess, here in this part of the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not just wake up, have breakfast. Your body needs time to do its thing and get going.
And there's recommendations there for movement?
Yeah.
Exercise?
So
or?
It's typically yoga focused.
Okay.
Because, again, this is India we're talking about. And
so we're talking about postures.
Posture
breathing.
Is, yeah. The main focus, again, we're dipping more into the yoga sort of side of it now, but the main focus is when you're doing the practice. So first thing in the morning, in the afternoon is quite good for yoga. If you're doing meditative sort of practices as well, that can be good in the morning. It's like at Patanjali, we were doing some yog nidra around 11 o'clock just before lunch, and also doing some acupressure too to go and help with the digest, again, getting the stomach moving and the digestive stuff
going.
This
is before lunch?
Yeah, but that's not strictly Ayurveda.
So what's yoga nidra?
Yog nidra.
Yoga nidra.
Pretty much it's a meditative practice where it's like you've got a candle in front of you and you're focusing on the candle. And I'm not really doing it justice, but it's a very calming and soothing sort of practice. But this is where this is, again, not strictly Ayurveda, but I think it dovetails well into these other practices. It's the sort of thing, it's a support for your healthy life. It doesn't claim to be a one-stop shop that's going to cure all your problems. But what it does say is that it's a healthy balance to support your life, and you need to use it in conjunction with things like yoga and all the rest for your lifestyle.
Yeah, well, what I've heard of is I've heard it yoga nidra, as they pronounce it in the West. Dr. Andrew Huberman, I think his name is, he talks about it as if you need to catch up on sleep, it's a great sleep hack. So if you're unable to to get a nice quality restorative sleep at night, you can do yoga nidra practices during the day to sort of get a similar effect of what sleep is. And meditation has been shown in studies to have a similar effect as sleep as well. And I think that's coming down to the breathing.
And the awareness there. And I think there's a lot that could be done in terms of breath work, but it's a bit of a tangent, I guess.
But that would be part. Is there anything in Ayurveda specifically looking at breathwork, or is that more the yoga side?
More the yoga side. Ayurveda is more lifestyle. It's like they'll tell you things like you don't. Again, this goes against a bit of the Western stuff, but you don't want to be eating fruit or dessert the very last thing at night. Or at the very least, don't do it every day. It's like you want to have that before your dinner. You don't want that as the very last thing to hit your stomach.
Because when you eat fruit on it by itself, it just goes right through you. So if you can have it half an hour before your meal, or before your meal, it gives it a chance to get quickly digested.
Mixing fruit as well can be a problem.
Mixing different fruits?
Yep, that can be an issue. Some combinations are good, some combinations are not good.
Yep.
But if in doubt, better to just go for a lot of one.
Yeah,
but yeah, we're a fan of all the mixing everything up, and that can lead to issues sometimes. But again, it just really depends. It's like you don't really want to have, for example, milk with the wrong, like milk is an easy one to pair with the wrong things if you're not careful. And fruit and milk can be something that clashes. And because people have cereals a lot, banana and milk's good.
Like nuts and seeds with milk or nuts?
No, I'm just, nuts and seeds are fine.
On their own, or can we mix those with other things?
Yeah, those could be mixed.
Okay.
Milk is just one of the ones that's commonly used as an example of the don'ts for pairing things. So milk and salty, milk and sour, and a fair number of fruits have got a sour sort of property to them. Milk and sweet is good. Yogurt's different to milk. It's got entirely different
fermented
properties.
Fermented, yeah.
Exactly. Ghee is different to milk as well, different properties. But yeah, there's just some do's and don'ts like that that they're helpful, but...
So for me, my do's and don'ts around dairy is, honestly, no one should be having pasteurized dairy. Pasteurized milk, at least. Because the medicine in milk isn't in the liquid, it isn't in the sugar, it's in the fat. That's where the medicine is. So when you have skim milk, you're missing out on all the medicine. When you have full cream milk, Milk, that's fine, but it's only 4% of the volume. So, and when you ferment it, I'm not sure how much of the fat gets changed, transformed, metabolized, but I know a lot of the milk nutrition changes. So when you're making yogurt or kefir, you get a lot more vitamins, just a lot more. It's completely different food, completely different. You can do that with pasteurized as well, but I recommend raw. If you're going to have milk, just milk, have raw. It's a living food. And then best thing, minimum, should be fermented. Raw fermented is a great food for those who cannot digest lactose, because the bacteria that can will grow in your body, and you'll get more of those lactase enzymes. Cream, so so you're getting more fat. So 35 to 50% fat is in cream. Like in Australia, you can get 55% cream on the store shelf. Not here in New Zealand. I think the highest I've seen is 40, which is which is a shame. It's nice. It's a lot, and that's where all the medicine, and when I say that, I mean the nutrients in dairy is in the fat. And then you go up to butter, which is 80% fat. But then the real magic medicine source is ghee, which is virtually 100% fat.
You can make your own ghee as well. I've done that recently. We got 12 litres or something of milk, and we popped it into, because ghee is quite easy to make.
So you went from milk. I used to get raw blocks of butter and then go that route. But you went from milk to cream to butter to ghee.
Yeah. But that's how you normally do it in India, right? Like you end up... I guess
I'm just lazier than you.
No. It's all good. But like what normally happens in India, right, is the milk comes from the cow.
Yep.
It gets cooked immediately. So you pop it onto the stove. You heat it up till it boils and starts frothing up. And then you let it cool down. And then we'd pop it in the fridge or something like that. And then you come back and then all the cream is nicely on the top. You could scoop that out.
So that helps with the getting the fat, the cooking. Okay.
Exactly. You can get that out, pop that to one side, and then you can cook that separately.
Cook the fat part separately?
Yep.
So you cook that. So you actually don't churn it into butter?
No. We would cook it separately, and then essentially you make butter that way, and then that turns into ghee.
So is it just one cooking process from cream straight to ghee?
Yeah, from cream to ghee once you go and get that out.
That's a cool shortcut.
Yeah. So we did that, and then I tried to freeze all of the leftover milk. Unfortunately for me, I didn't unscrew the tops on top of the glass bottles. Yeah. So while it did freeze safely, the glass just cracked. Liquid expands. Yeah. Andrew. I didn't fill it up to the top. But
you're a smart man, but you didn't know this.
I know, right? I thought I'd be safe if I didn't fill it up to the top, but it burst out the sides. Anyway, the milk was safe, but the glass bottles will not be reusable, which is a pity.
But that's a good idea, because ghee is very expensive at the shop. It is worth it if you cannot make it yourself. It is, like I said, the only reason to have dairy is the fat, because all the nutrition's in the fat, and I'm focusing in on vitamin A and vitamin K2. We don't get enough of those in our diet, unless you're eating organ meats.
If you're vegetarian as well, the protein. You really want the protein, because that's whole protein. You've got all of your essential amino acids, and it's rare that you get that in... Like eggs are another one if you can. Like obviously vegans are a different story, but if you can have...
They are a different story.
I know, right?
I'm making fun of my vegan friends.
But yeah, dairy in India is huge.
That's because indigenous cultures, people who have traditions thousands of years old before the Western... what do you want to call it? Dr. Weston A. Price called them foods of Western commerce before... Westerners came along and processed all the nutrition out of food. Traditional cultures knew how to make themselves healthy, happy, peaceful, loving, strong, fit, and fertile, and easygoing, like no stress, no cancer, no tooth decay. And Dr. Weston A. Price, he was a dentist, an American dentist in the 30s. He traveled the world. He came to New Zealand. He went all over the place, and he found the one difference between those who were healthy and those who had cavities and got cancer and all this stuff was the foods of Western commerce. Processed flour, processed milk. So when a place like India makes the cow sacred and they use the dairy for all this thing, there's a reason. It's not just because they chose it out of nowhere. It's not some arbitrary choice. They saw that when they did this to this food, health improved, people improved, mood improved, fertility improved.
Well, it's like if you take a typical breakfast, for example. So let's say a khichdi breakfast, because it's simple, it's cheap, which is always a plus. So you've got your mung, literally khichdi is just your mung dal, which is the green dal. It's the most digestible dal. You can soak it.
Mung dal, is that like mung bean?
Yeah, mung bean.
Mung bean, yeah.
Yep. You soak it for a couple of hours with some rice. So then you can go and get out. Again, if you're going to go down the western route, you're getting out the things that are going to stop you absorbing the nutrients from it. I think it's the lectins and the phytates.
Yeah.
I might be... Might have
the lectins irritate the gut and the phytates absorb the minerals and nutrients so that you don't get them.
Exactly.
So you need to soak, yeah.
You get that out, then you cook that up in a pressure cooker or in a pot or whatever with some spices, done.
Mm.
That's a really healthy, nutritious breakfast. And if you add some yogurt, you add a bit, like maybe you cooked in a bit of ghee, you sprout some of the...
Ayurvedic version of cereal?
Yeah. It's
but there's no grains, it's just beans and rice.
Pretty much. I don't know if I'd call it beans, but yeah, it is beans, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, it's really high in protein and it's the sort of thing that's not going to irritate your system. It's like, you know how you were saying before about your fermented food and all of that? Amazing if your digestive fire is strong enough. But the problem is that with the people that are really struggling with their their digestive symptoms, sometimes it's like we were given food that was quite cooked and we were told to avoid fermented foods in the detox process, and for my wife just in general, because her problem is her digestive fire is just too weak to handle the raw food and do that full breakdown.
Interesting, because raw food, I would agree, is hard to digest, but it does come with its own enzymes. Fermented raw food is usually pre-digested, but that's still difficult in the Ayurvedic philosophy. Yeah.
Not as bad as full raw, but again, bad isn't the right word. I'd love it. It's perfect for me.
Yeah, and at the same time, I think you'd agree, try it. Try it if it works,
Exactly, yeah. Jason. I think that's the philosophy in all of this. Just give it a go and see what works. And I don't think that there's a miracle diet that's out there. I think it's just going to be finding what's your diet. And that's really what the principle of Ayurveda comes down to.
And that's this mindset in the West that it really needs to go. If, people talking about a virus, or there's this mind virus of convenience, wanting it now, wanting it cheap, not having to put effort into it. And also... Yeah, it should be easy. It should just be this one diet. There should be this one food, this one pill. There should be this one thing that fixes it and makes me. But that's not true. I don't know where the story came from, but it needs to go. It's so false.
It's pervasive. And I think that I think where it's come from is basic medical science, which is like a GP can't tell you to do something unless they're darn sure it's going to work for 99% of people, whatever the percentage is. Because they don't want it to go wrong for you, and then you'd come for them afterwards going, you told me to do this, but it's stuffed up. And that really holds them back too, because they can't tell you, for example, to play with your diet if you've got a thyroid problem, because where's the proof that it's going to work for everybody that comes in?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, come through as well for things like diet, like your whole nutritionist sort of stuff. There's a lot of caution and giving people beyond the most basic information, because we're complicated and what works for you might not work for me.
And there's also this thing with authority and I'm better than you, I know more than you, you can't handle this, you're not so smart as me, I went to medical school, do what I say, you're beneath me. And there's also this thing where they don't see the human in front of them, they're just another number. And instead of having a conversation going, hey, maybe this person can take more information, let me share this, here's a few links, here's a book, we aren't seeing each other and giving each other the benefit of the doubt that, hey, maybe this person can take more. And
I'll be honest though, Jason, I found that in Raglan that the quality of doctors here is far superior to what I've had in Auckland. I've had people that were doing Google image searches for the different thyroid blood tests, like in Auckland, like some downright incompetent people. I know, right?
A whole lot of nothing.
In all seriousness, though, I think we are like there is a role for the medical system, and I think we're blessed with the quality that we've got here compared to other places in New Zealand. Don't get me wrong, I'm here talking about Ayurveda for a reason, but I think at the same time we shouldn't round up the GPs and tell them that they're like not doing a good and helpful job at all.
No, I mean, the people in Whangaroa are really awesome, including the people at the clinic. And you need to create a dream team when you're on your goal and vision of healing and finding the best way to reduce your symptoms and get better. And that includes a doctor, having a doctor on hand, on call, as well as and maybe an Ayurvedic practitioner, traditional Chinese medicine, Reiki, massage, nutritionist, a health coach. You know, there's not one person that you should be going to. It should be many.
Where I think, though, that people stuff up, though, Jason, is that they delegate the responsibility for their health to someone else.
Yeah, this is coming back to the authority thing. It's like, I don't know, I can't do it. This person knows, they can do it. They should do it, actually. No, it is their responsibility, not mine.
Exactly.
It's one of those stories that, yeah.
At the end of the day, I think that it's like, for me, I've got to take responsibility for my health, find what works for me for what doesn't. It's like when I go to the doctor, I've got my own little spreadsheet of my blood test results. They've managed to lose them between doctors and stuff like that as well, which is really ridiculous. But and I go through and I look at them too, and I try to interpret them and work out what's going on. Like, I listen to the doctors, but they're reporting to me and I make my decision. I listen to Ayurveda. It's like, we went around, we must have found 30 people, if not more, that were swearing black and blue in India that they could cure my wife if we just paid them this or spent that time with them. Most of them were just snake oil
merchants. If you just pay me more.
Yeah, I know, right? We can guarantee a cure. Yeah. But ultimately, we had to take responsibility. And for us, a lot of it was learning, because I didn't want, and my wife certainly didn't want, to just keep going back year on year, because, like, even though Ayurveda did really help her symptoms, we needed to learn the knowledge so that we could go and sort this out for good. So, like, it turned out a lot of her problems were that she was in a state of agitation around eating, and she needed to be in a place of calm, letting her emotions settle, different exercises that were helpful for her and that sort of thing. And it's like, when she's feeling upset and agitated and nervous and anxious, that's a cocktail that makes her digestive symptoms shut down.
Well, it's not just her, that's everyone. That's why I tell people, one of the best things you can do when you're eating is to not read, because reading, using your eyes, actually takes a lot of energy, which means less energy for your digestion. So don't read, and listen or watch something that's funny, uplifting, inspiring, light, nothing dark. Don't put the news on while you're having your dinner or having lunch or breakfast or whatever. Don't have an argument. Like, just try to, you know, if something comes up, just let it go for once the meal is done. Just be focused on the meal. Be present to the taste, to the textures, to the smells, to the sounds, to the people around you. If there's people there, like, really engage in that process. And I'm guessing I'm talking about Zen here. Be with what you're doing in this. What are you doing? You're eating and digesting. So be with that just for, like, the next 20 minutes.
Ayurveda agrees with you.
Okay.
And the idea is that there, you want to be present with the food. You're taking this into yourself, and you're making, like, it's becoming part of you. And how you go about that process determines how well you absorb it. Different things will help your digestive fire. Different things will harm it. As well, it's like the taste is really important. So it's like Ayurveda breaks up the properties of food based on its taste. And what your body craves as well is important. It's like, some tastes help increase some doshas and they decrease others. But ultimately, your body typically has got a fairly good idea of what it needs, and it's just reading into the cravings and understanding what it is looking for.
Yeah.
And as well, it's like, if you're craving sugar, that doesn't necessarily mean that sugar is the best solution for you, but it's useful data.
Yeah, and the craving should be more for something real, like fruit or nuts, or even like, so there'll be times where I'll eat organ meat, like liver, and I could take it or leave it. It's not the best taste. And then there'll be times where I'm not having it for a while, and then all of a sudden, I feel like it. And then I have it, and it's like, oh, this is actually not that bad. So now my taste buds are enjoying it. And there'll be times where I'll have lemon juice and, oh, this is sour. And other times I have, and it's like, this is really nice, I want more. It's like, it's almost sweet. So the times when you're eating something and it's easy for you to taste, like you're actually happy and excited to have this, that actually means your body's wanting more of this. There's something in here, nutrient-wise, and minerals, vitamins, that your body wants and needs to have more of that. So use that as a sign too.
And this isn't something that is divisive or anything. Talking to one of the nutritionists up in Auckland that we'd consult with before going down the Ayurvedic route, she was telling us to add this mineral supplement to the water. And the way you tell when you've done too much, when you've done too much, is if you add one more drop, you can taste it. And
well, that's what I do every morning, is I add sea salt to my water. I use sea salt because it's easier to mix than Himalayan salt. And yeah, you add as much as you can take before it gets too salty. It's very simple. If it's too salty, if you can't drink it, then you've added too much. But I just want to go back to what you said before about going to someone or going to a hospital or clinic or person, a health practitioner, and just going back and going back and going back. My goal when I help people is I don't want you to need me in the future. My goal is to have you self-sufficient. Have me in your back pocket. But man, I really hope that whatever I'm teaching you lands, and then you take this and integrate it into your life, and then it becomes a part of your own tool and how you look after yourself and your family. Yeah, you shouldn't be coming back to me. If you're coming back to me, I'm doing something wrong.
I think there's two or three routes here, Jason. So I agree with you, as like you're a really good practitioner who can give people some sound advice and some sound. I think coaching is the word, and helping them identify where their problems are, what they can do about it. Checking in with you periodically to see, say, am I still on course, and giving you a bit of some extra ideas, maybe taking things to the next level down. That's always helpful for a coach. But I don't think, until when you're past that initial issue, I don't think there's any need for a dependence. No. But at least initially, if you've got a big issue, then it can make sense to keep going back. A GP, for example, periodic blood tests might be useful just to keep an eye on it for maintenance. But it's like myself too with the financial life coaching I do. I don't want people to keep coming back. The idea is that you learn the skills and that's it. You're sorted. You can then go off and apply the skills, and maybe you want a refresher every now and then. But the goal is that you've learned how to do it yourself.
You know, I guess I'm bringing that up because if you're going to, and I'm seeing this a lot in the counselor or therapist field, where they just have people for years, decades, and nothing's changed. And that's where I worry that people are being taken advantage of. So, like, just step back and look objectively. Is this helping? Is there any progress? Am I learning? Like, just learning. Are you learning anything about yourself? If there's nothing changing there, maybe you just need to switch practitioners.
The other thing, too, to consider is what's the role that they're performing for you in your life, and getting clearer on that. So a GP or someone like that who you're seeing every year for the blood test, for example, that looks very different to a counsellor that you're there to, say, process some childhood trauma and you keep coming back. Maybe the role has changed from a counsellor to a friend that you want to just process what's going on during the week. That sort of thing. I think just getting clearer on the role that they play in your life and then going, is this the role I want them to play? Maybe I could be a bit more vulnerable with my friends instead.
Yeah, going back to Ayurveda, is there anything there that focuses on mental health or the mind?
Yes, it's huge. It's like, for example, what I was talking about before about what helps my wife. That was absolutely key, because the doctors there were essentially told her, you're going to have to just reduce your stress level. That's going to be what's going to solve your issue.
What were the recommendations?
So the way they go about it is they came up with a daily schedule sort of thing, and they were recommending taking time for yoga, taking time for meditation, time for us to connect as well, husband and wife sort of thing.
So a lot of yin practices or...
Yeah.
Because there's working out where you expend energy, then there's working in where you cultivate. So when it sounds like reducing stress amounts to the same thing as building energy, building up.
But that was the recommendations for her. Different people, it might be different.
Right.
And again, I think the mental sort of element and the emotional element is really important there. It's like one Ayurvedic doctor, we went to an Ayurvedic doctor for what was essentially marriage counseling and intimacy, talking about intimacy and stuff like that. And that's not what I'd normally expect to get from a doctor. But no, that was actually really, really good. And I think as well, different practitioners have got different strengths in different areas. Yeah. And in New Zealand, it's quite tricky to find someone that's good. We didn't, which was why we went to India. But I don't want to say that there isn't anyone good in New Zealand just because we couldn't find someone. It might be just where we were at in Auckland or something that. But yeah, it's something I think that you can certainly read about, you can learn about. there's basic things. It's like if we are coming down with a bit of, well, if we want to boost our immunity, preferably before we start getting sick, because there's some colds and flus going around, well, we've got different teas and things that we take. We adjust our diet as well when we're sick to help us get well sooner. It's like, for me, I know what sorts of teas are good when it's the time of the month for my wife and stuff like that. And there's things that help with period pain and that sort of thing.
Do you have a tea for guys when it's the time of the day?
I haven't looked into that one yet, Jason, but I'm sure there's something out there. But there's all of these sorts of things that are available and possible for you in the Ayurvedic route. And I just think, have a little look, have an explore. It's like the book that I've got in front of me, it might be a little bit, if you're wanting a more in-depth approach, it's called A Practical Approach to the Science of Ayurveda by Acharya Balkrishna. Might be a little trickier to find in New Zealand, but you can order it online.
Yeah, I just got myself a book on Ayurveda. It's a doctor, I think she's from America. Yeah, I'll share that in the links as well. I think that's more for Western audiences.
Yeah, this one, it's a good book because it starts out at a low level and then it builds it up. It's like towards the end of the book, it's got all of these in-depth tips and this herb does this and this spice does that. And I'm just looking at it going, I can't compute you yet, but I'm going to come back to you in a year or so. And when I've like taken on the level that I'm at, and then I can go one level deeper. Yeah, there's just so much depth and richness.
There's a lot of books like that are great to have in your own personal library, you know, just a resource to go to.
I mean, exactly.
Just got to imagine if there's no power, no communications, who do you go to? Who do you turn to? There's this book that might help, you know, might have some advice. So.
But yeah, I reckon people can learn how to integrate this, like if you're doing homeopathy, if you're doing... if you're pretty much doing nearly anything, Ayurveda can just slop in as a bit of a support.
Okay, what about eating or being healthy on a budget, food-wise? So we've talked about buying, sounds like you buy bulk milk.
Yes.
And there's beans or mung dal and rice, which is nice and economical. Any other tips or anything else that you do?
Well, first jumping back to the mung dal, it matters where you buy it a lot. Okay. If you're up in Auckland at any point and you're in Papatoetoe or you're in Mount Roskill, you're in the Indian hood,
yeah.
Go to the Indian supermarkets. Lotus supermarket's pretty good. And Mount Roskill, it's good quality, though it's not the cheapest Indian supermarket. There are some cheaper ones in Papatoetoe.
Is anything out in Hamilton?
There are some in Hamilton, but they are not the cheapest in the world.
Slightly a bit more, eh? Yeah.
Yeah. That's why for me, I buy in bulk up in Auckland. But for that, you've got to have the money put aside to be able to buy in bulk. And that can be a little bit tricky if you're more than a little bit tricky.
But you are saving long term, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's worth it. It's like for me, I've bought cashews. What was the best price? $8 a kilo was the best. And that's insane compared to what you get at the supermarket.
Sounds like we need to create some sort of co-op.
I know, right? There's someone plenty of them going.
Get, yeah.
And then I guess you can go and get even better discounts. But yeah, it's like rice, Indian supermarkets, quality rice. You can cook it like rubbish and it still comes out well.
Still tasty.
Which is, and individual grains, which is much better than the supermarket. But yeah, what it really comes down to for your dried food, buy in bulk and in bulk from the stores that give you good quality and good prices. And unfortunately, you're probably going to have to go on a bit of a road trip or recruit someone for that. For fresh fruit and veggies, seasonal. There's normally an excess. We're blessed with things in Raglan, so crop swap. We've got the local markets, though they can be a little bit pricey. Well, it depends on where you go, I guess. There are people that are growing fruit and vegetables around too. Some are happy to share if you go and ask them first and maybe you swap something with them. I've recently got a dehydrator. Thank you, Facebook Marketplace, for giving it a good price. And there are, again, like we were up in Auckland once and we got something like 10 kilos of bananas for a couple of dollars.
Yes, yeah. So preserving food. Exactly. Do you do anything else besides dehydrate?
We've got dehydrating, we've got freezing.
Do you do any ferments?
We do. I've got some sauerkraut in the fridge right now, though I don't really want to. Like that will. It's better than buying sauerkraut from the supermarket, but that's cheaper. But it's still not cheap considering the price of the vegetables right now. That
true. So it was cheaper.
I know. But I can't really.
I can make sauerkraut for a dollar.
Depends on where you can get them from. But yeah, it's like fruits. Ask if you've got a dehydrator, that's really helpful. Freezer, that's really helpful. Buy when it's in season. And you can often get excess as well from supermarkets.
Yes, stuff that's going off or on sale.
Exactly.
That doesn't look nice because people don't like to eat ugly food for some reason.
Well, like overripe tomatoes, you can turn that into pasta sauce. My wife picked up 8 kilos of it the other day and from Super Value at a good price. And now that's frozen in our freezer.
Did you skin and deseed them?
Ah, some we did, some we didn't.
Rookie mistake, mate. So just going back to traditional practices, those sauce tomatoes would be skinned and deseeded because those were the irritants to the gut. Yeah. Same thing with corn. Cultures never ate corn off the cob. It was always put into a lime solution, an alkaline solution, and fermented before they made them into something that you can eat. So, yeah, there's always a preparation for all these foods.
Personally, I've found for my wife and I, we've got quite different constitutions. For me, I haven't found any issues from it personally, but if I did start to develop something, then I'd be looking into that. I think my digestive system just burns through whatever I'm putting in right now. So it's like, for me, I'm not too worried, but for my wife, I would be going, okay, we need to make sure that we've got a good handle on it. So yeah, different people, different approaches, and that's cool.
And weren't you making your own bread?
Yes, sourdough. And your what we borrowed from you to help us actually do that was very good. So again, there we'd got wheat in bulk, because white flour, no thank you.
So was this flour, wheat flour?
Yeah, well, we've actually got the physical wheat that we grind, so we've got a good quality blender that we just throw it in. Okay. And that works out quite well.
There's always that, you know, is it cheaper to buy the device like a dehydrator, like a juicer, a blender, a mill, and then make your own, or to just buy it? And I think long term it is better to buy a device or find someone who has one, do it that way.
Well, if you've got a mill, for example, on your road, one person, you're not going to be all wanting it at the same time. So teaming up with neighbors, with flatmates, all of that sort of thing is a great way to go. And keep an eye out on Marketplace for bargains. It's like we got our dehydrator for $50 and it should have been for $200. And I guess then you also, if you ever had to sell it, I guess you've made a profit, though you probably don't want to. That's not what you're going in there to get. If you just know what things are worth, then, and like just keep an eye out beforehand, that can help. But a lot of this is just a time investment. So you've got resource, God, I'm going down my finance route now, but you've got three main resources, right, Jason? You've got your time, you've got money, and you've got your emotional cup. And most of these practices that I'm talking about now, like we went and found a whole bunch of watercress in a nice place that it was growing, we harvested it, we prepared it, that takes time and it saves you money. And the question is, well, how do you want to operate your life? What is it that you value the most, and what resources do you have more of and less of? So a lot of the practices that I'm talking about now will cost time, but they will probably save you money, and they'll probably be better for your health. So it's all a bit of a give and take, and you've just got to work out where your priorities are at and what works for you. But yeah, anyway, finance, life coach hat off, Ayurveda hat on.
Well, I don't know, is there anything in Ayurveda around purpose and meaning and values and goal setting?
There, it's more spiritually oriented. Mm-hmm. So, and again, that ties back more to yoga. Okay. The society, there's a lot more segmentation of society based on your role and your class. And there's very strong societal views about what your purpose should be and what your role is. So there, it's more like, obviously people get to choose, there's the role of choice, but there is a lot more, well, this is what you've been born into, this is what you're doing. It's like if you were born as a like someone that helps out on the farms and you've got no money, you're going to be helping out on the farms. Mm. You don't exactly have the most choice in the world. So I think that's reflected there, that there's less around the whole purpose sort of role, though I guess down the yoga route there's more the relationship with God and the spiritual and the divine. I think that's probably the closest.
Yeah. It's all connected. It's all, yeah.
Mm.
It just depends, you know, there's the left brain and the right brain and trying to please each side of how you work. No, but that's great, bro. That's awesome information. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we sign off?
Focus on what works for you and trust yourself above all else. Just if you can cultivate that trust in yourself, I think that's what's going to serve you the best, because ultimately no one knows your health like you. And yep. That's at the end of the day, you're the one that's going to be living your life. So make it about you.
Yeah. For me, it'd be build your dream team who are on your side.
Yes.
And who are living for you, for your agenda, and don't have their own personal agendas to make money or whatever it is that they've got going on. But yeah, and be that person in someone else's dream team as well.
Exactly.
A lot of healing happens when you serve others. So
yeah, if you've got a partner as well that are going through health challenges, it can be a scary place. It's like you might not know what's going on with your body. You might be feeling quite scared, and just being receptive and giving that emotional reassurance and helping them stand up for themselves and enabling them, that's a really helpful thing sometimes, because it could be a scary, lonely place where you're like, I don't know what's coming next from my body. And just having that rock of reassurance there means a lot.
Mm.
So I think, yeah, I guess they're part of the dream team too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool, man. Is there a way people can contact you if they want to get some more, because you're focusing on the financial coaching?
Yeah. So you can find me in a couple of ways. So your best bet would be to either catch me on Facebook, so Andrew Coffin. Holistic Finances is the company that I've set up to do it. So holisticfinances@gmail.com, another way to contact me. But yeah, you can also stop and say hi. I don't bite.
Yeah, I'll have to get you back on to talk about that side of things.
I'd love to. Cool, thanks, bro. Jason.
Thanks for coming on. Thank you once again, Andrew, for sharing your experience with Ayurveda. It was really good for me to know that I was actually practicing quite a bit of it without realizing it. But that's the thing about holistic health. It encompasses a lot of universal truths when it comes to happiness and wholeness and healing. Yeah, so for more information on Ayurveda, I recommend the book that Andrew recommended himself, A Practical Approach to the Science of Ayurveda, A Comprehensive Guide for Healthy Living by Acharya Bhukrishna. And the book I'm reading at the moment regarding Ayurveda is Everyday Ayurveda, Daily Habits That Can Change Your Life, and that's by Dr. Baswati Bhattacharya. And yeah, so that's it from me. Until next time, stay free, be yourself, know that you are loved, and that you are love. Kia kaha.